Hey, funny business listeners, Caleb Holstein, co-founder of Squarex Innovations here. As Aussies, we love our coffee, and the Australian coffee scene has long been a global benchmark for quality and innovation. And now I'm thrilled to introduce you to the best innovation since the flat white, Squarex's first product deployment, GreenSquare. GreenSquare is a holistic ag tech software suite enabling coffee roasters and importers to take control of their largest product cost, green coffee. At Squarex, we're securing the digital future of the coffee supply chain and beyond.
Hello and welcome to Funny Business. As the name suggests, a little bit of funny and a little bit of business. And on today's episode, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Lee Dunsford, founder of 925, co-founder of Waddle. He's Australian fintech warrior is probably the best way to describe him. He loves the space. He's out there doing good things. And I love this episode. He's a real dude and he loves his stuff, doesn't he?
Oh, how good are pods when the guest can just tell a story, have you just zoned in, and we don't have to do much.
We're dialed in listening. I know a few people have been out there taking the piss of my listening face in the video clips, but I was deeply engaged into this episode, trying to be like a sponge and learn from Lee, who, as we said before, he's done some pretty cool stuff in this space, and to see what he's doing now, and I don't know, you'll get into it in the episode. I don't want to give away too much of the gold in the intro, but just whatever, get into it. Hey, Lee, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business Podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Locke. Thanks for having me. I'm Lee Dunsford. I'm the founder of 925. We're a money app that's seeking to solve the, get young people into investing earlier and saving and basically making money easier through automated money management tools. So, yeah, thanks for having me and really excited to be on the podcast.
Well, mate, we're absolutely stoked to have you here, and I feel like this is something in this space, love to dig into a bunch of stuff, but maybe they're kicking off of where did the passion for fintech and being in that space start?
Doesn't depends on how far you want me to go back, but it probably started a very, very long time ago. So I've pretty much never had a real job, so to speak. I've worked on a peach farm, a petrol station, and that's about it. And beyond that, done my own thing. So, you know, back when I was a really, really young bloke, still a young bloke, but still younger bloke, and when I was probably, 15, 16 years old, I was tinkering with websites back then, and around that time was a tech boom, and I always regret missing out on that big tech boom. But, effectively from there we went into basically financial products and stuff like that. But, it all stemmed from the top room of a barn at my parents' place. I used to stay up late till 5 o'clock in the morning working on websites and tinkering, ripping them apart and putting them back together. And I'd stay up till the sun came up base every day, and I just love it. So that's where it all sort of stemmed from, and that just kept going. And it also helped that, my parents, dad was a ship's captain sailing around the world effectively. He'd be away at 3 or 6 months at a time and come back, and mum ran a, we basically grew flowers, and I used to help mum take those flowers to market all the time, and sort of that entrepreneurial sort of shift sort of started to happen there. And then, it all sort of stemmed through my 20s, and my brother, as I was at university doing a science degree, I wouldn't know why I did a science degree, to be honest, but I just thought, hey, that's a good idea. And I think before the last year I was about to finish off that, I just started a an online DVD business, and that sort of kicked off from there. But that went on for a while. I sold that and went into business with my brother, and went into financing and went into commercial lending and property finance. So we effectively just started with 30 grand in our pocket and started lending that out to folks that wanted to get some short-term capital to renovate their house or fix up their investment property. And then that grew into an actual business, and we started growing that up. Through all the property cycle, and then from there we looked into commercial financing and a product called invoice financing, and that sort of effectively meant that I had to learn a lot of things, not professionally trained, no financial skills, didn't go work for a finance company, didn't do it at uni, just learnt on the job, learning how to lend people money, do contracts, legalities, recoveries, all that sort of stuff. And then that grew into another product called trade financing. And then I had to learn how to do import export financing. it went so far as that I used to ring up factories in China and organize inspections and check products and manufacturing processes to managing shipping, import, exporting through a product we used to call purchase order financing. And purchase order financing would be like, hey, you know, Jerry Harvey's mob said, I've got an order for 2 million USB sticks. And we would go, okay, well, you've got an order. The person would come to us, or the business owner would say, I've got an order for 2 million USB sticks. Jerry Harvey's, you know, Harvey Norman's a great company to buy it. And we'd go, rightio, on the strength of that order, we'll check the validity of the order, check the factory, do the inspections, manage the whole process, get it delivered for you, and we'll take a cut of the sale. So I'd learn all of that. And yeah, stop me if you want me to stop, because I can keep going. And then that led into, you know, basically, as you imagine, any startup story, one of my best mates moved in with me. We're living by the beach, down at the pub, and we're like, hey, he's working for IBM. I'm working over here with my family. And we're like, hey, why don't we go out on our own? Back of the napkin kind of thing. A few drunk blokes on the balcony at night, and just went, you know, what's a good idea? And as you can imagine, it's a bit of a high five, we're doing it kind of thing. Then wake up the next morning and go, are we really doing this? And we're like, yeah, we're doing it. We're going to do it. So I went out and started doing that same thing on my own. He came in, and yeah, during that process, we just for a little bit of fun as well, but started doing overseas conventions and stuff and looking at fintech products overseas and thinking, well, what's the next thing happening? And at that time, accounting, cloud accounting software was just starting to get some movement. It was bigger in the States through a product called QuickBooks Online over there. And what we noticed was there was these companies which were connecting to accounting software and accessing the data and doing stuff off it. And we were like, hang on, we're already doing that product in Australia, but it's really clunky and yuck. And, you know, it was called invoice factoring, and factoring was like lender of last resort, don't want to touch it, it's an administration nightmare. And we were doing that product and we were like, this sucks for us even doing the product. And then we thought, well, why don't we build an add-on to accounting software like that? And Xero at the time, or MYOB as well, were sort of exposing their APIs or their data to other outsiders to come and build some, you know, ecosystem around it. And that's sort of where it started. But even leading up to that, we started products called DealHound and Loan Desk and all these automatic matching platforms which are around today. There's one called Valiant Finance, which is quite successful today. But we started the first one called Loan Desk, or we believe the first one in Australia, many, many moons ago. And literally it did the same thing. We built this whole online system which got all the lenders typing, you know, your loan criteria, and we match you automatically, and we did all of that. So that we ended up throwing that in the bin, and yeah, went down the path and eventually decided to call the product called Waddle. And then Waddle was the add-on to the accounting software package. But there's a lot of stories about how we actually get that thing off the ground, and some sneaky tactics to get people to notice us. But ultimately, yeah, it worked out all right for us. So which led me to where we are today at 9to5, which it's a product which kind of is the same as Waddle, which is a, you know, we were solving business cash flow for businesses. And then I was like, well, you know, how do I solve the cash flow problem for employees that have got the same problem which a business has effectively? How do they get paid quicker? But yeah, that's sort of a bit of the story where we got to today.
What is it about the startup space that attracts you in the first place? Like, be able to like do your own thing. You mentioned from the start, you're tinkering around doing websites, staying up all night. And but even like just the effort and the intensity of what goes in to build something from scratch. You've had a few goes at doing different stuff, and now again in 9to25, I'd love to get into maybe like the mindset behind what attracts you to this space and how you like approach tackling startups at that early stage.
I actually think I have a little bit of a problem with I dislike stress, but then I kind of feed off the stress as well, I feel like. But it could all stem back from the early days, which probably is not any different to any other young boy at the time. But I used to, you know, pull things apart, put them back together all the time, and, you know, constantly doing that and trying to build things up. And those early days when I was 16, 17 years old, pulling about websites and putting them back together is sort of reminiscent of that. And so, you know, I have trouble learning about things unless I'm doing them. So if you put me and say, hey, you know, at school, even though I didn't fail at school, I didn't do exceptionally well, because if you give me a textbook to read and say, go learn and do a test on it, and I'm not interested in that subject, I just really can't sit down and study it. It's really difficult for me to do it. And so I just learn on the job, which is probably, you know, when you're asking me about, you know, trade financing and invoice factoring and how I learn about all of that, it was literally because that was my interest and I had no other choice but to learn how to do it. And I think the first couple of years of a business is the most exciting part for me. And then once it gets to a point where it's grown up, I lose a bit of that passion. It dissipates for me. So I don't feel it as much anymore. And once it starts to run on its own a bit, that's where I sort of start to feel that I lose my effectiveness in a business, because I'm good at sparking the idea, sparking the upstart, you know, rallying the troops, getting everything together and pushing a product out. But beyond that, once it's, you know, humming along and it's got management and, you know, a board and all these things happening, that's when the spark starts to die out. And so maybe that's part of my passionate side around driving to start new things. And so within a business, that's what keeps me going, is continually developing it and innovating in the business. And once it becomes a, you know, a flat sort of product, which is just a repetitive, you know, day in, day out thing, that's when I lose, I guess, a bit of that excitement around it. And I'm pretty sure I do. That's what happens to me. So that's what drives me, is just the kickoff and the boost and getting it to customers. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's the right analogy, but I sort of say to people, you know, if you've ever gone fishing and you're sitting all day and you're fishing and you're bored as hell, I kind of like watching cricket and then you get a six, right? Or you're watching, you know, or you're sitting there and you're fishing and then you get a bite, you know, and you land that fish. It's worth it for that whole day of, you know, not misery, but sometimes it is a bit of misery and ups and downs, and those sparks of ups and downs and excitement is what, you know, keeps me going. I think it's that feeling. So when you get the customers, you get the revenue and you've gone through all this hard work, the process of the pain and the payoff is the exciting part for me. That's what gets me. That's what keeps me going at the end of the day and starting new things. So notwithstanding the fact that I'm probably unemployable as well. So, you know, I don't know if I could go out and get a job tomorrow, because I don't know. They're going to go, hey, you've done all this stuff and you want to come and work for me now? I don't think that's going to work, because you're going to come in here and just go, nah, I don't know if I can do a day-to-day job. So I think, yeah, I'm unemployable as well. So that could be part of it. Secretly, I don't know.
Have you always had this sort of self-awareness? Because I feel like just knowing sort of how you operate and figuring out where your strengths are and all that sort of stuff, have you always sort of had that growing up?
I think I have a I think what I've always had this knack, or not this knack, I've had this feeling that because my morals, I have a very good moral, oh, I believe I have a moral very good compass, and this is a bit philosophical, but I feel that the world treats me right because my moral compass is correct, and no matter what I do, I always am doing what I'm doing for the right reasons, and so things tend to work out for me, even though it's very stressful, right? And so I think things tend to always work out for me when I'm under the highest pressure points, like when things are really pressured and it's like, you know, turning that coal into a diamond, that's what kind of happens to me, which kind of sucks because I wish it just all went smoothly, but that's the reality of startup world. But the self-awareness part around probably maybe late 30s sort of, you're sort of thinking, I'm kind of like, you know, a jack of all trades, but really a master of None, right? Because when you're running these businesses, you've got to learn so many different things. I'm talking like you're doing the legals, you're doing the marketing, you know, you're doing the building, you're doing, you know, you're on the phones to customers, and I'm even out cold calling them on the streets, you know, licking envelopes. So back in the day, I used to, you know, do everything completely manual. You know, and at one point I was doing 3 interstate flights a week, you know, for one of the businesses, and just in and out constantly. So you're kind of on the job across everything, but there's not one thing you seem to be very, very good at in amongst all of that. And I think that's self-awareness, that when you need to bring in these specialist people that are very good at singular items within your business, and, you know, having more than a few people that are generalists probably is not such a good idea. But yeah, self-awareness around that is probably, yeah, and also the stress side of business is probably the toughest part to deal with on a day-to-day, I'd say, is the self-awareness for me. I've struggled with stress a lot over the years, handled it well sometimes and sometimes very poorly.
it's probably actually a good segue. One of the questions we ask all our guests is, what do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life? And I feel like with a bunch of founders and people who are in this sort of world, something that we've talked about a fair bit is just like how far people push things and, like, I guess realistic expectations for people who are in there building stuff versus if you're an employee working for somewhere and they say, my job's hard and I can't do this stuff. I feel like there's no backward step. Like, sometimes you're in this point, you're in this position where you're stressed because you're trying to make stuff happen. But if you don't do it, then it's not getting done. It's a different feeling of like, there's no one there to like pick up the slack. So keen to understand what you turn to get some energy back in your life.
Yeah. So that's quite a good point. I mean, some employees get, if they've never worked for a startup before, they're quite, I guess, disconnected from the stress that founders or founding teams might go through in terms of like what you're talking about. Like, once you get into a startup and you're a founder or a part of the founding team and you've raised money and you've got shareholders, there's no choice but to push through every obstacle. Every challenge must be pushed through, come hell or high water, like, and you must keep moving forward. And that's, you know, I would have to admit that there is long periods of time where at the start of the week, I want to walk out. By the end of the week, this thing's going to be going through the roof. And then the next week, same cycle. Well, it's down again. Shit. You know, maybe we should maybe close up shop. Oh, no, whoa, hang on. This is going gangbusters. Things are going really well. So it's a roller coaster ride daily. But the point is that it's the push through, really. It's the grit. It's the push through. And I guess, I lost track a little bit there of your main question. Was it the...
What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the only thing that really... So that actually the main thing that I've been focusing on lately, which has been working really well, is not being tied to the outcome, but being worrying of just thinking about the process that I've got to go through every day. And so the process for me every day now is, you know, not thinking I've got to get up and work from, you know, as soon as the kids are gone at 7 o'clock or whatever, 8 o'clock, and then thinking I just must be always doing something, like always doing something, because that's what you're normally used to. I need to be, if I'm not doing something, am I actually productive? But then moving to, well, if I'm going to go and actually de-stress from this business or detach in some capacity, you know, there's always that, oh, I'm not going to go do something because it's going to take an hour to do that, and that's a long time out of my day. Or go start something new because that's going to be, oh, I've got to learn how to do it, or, you know, go and start another conversation and become mates with someone and, you know, de-stress or, you know, do that. But so what I did is basically said, well, as long as I can just get away for 10 minutes and start something new, or, you know, the gym, or eat better, just slightly better, then what I've found is that then ends up being that I'm in the gym for 45 minutes and I've forgotten about that hour that I thought was so important, and now I'm in the gym for an hour and I can tick that off, and not going, oh, I'm going to go to the gym every day because I'm going to go there for an hour and I'm going to pump, you know, I'm going to do the hardest workout possible and then become ripped and fit and it's all going to be amazing. And I'm going to be like one of those founders that gets up in the morning and has done yoga at 4 a.m., an ice bath at 6 a.m., done meditation, written down daily goals. And then he goes for a 4-hour bike ride and then starts work at 10 o'clock and works through the midnight. Something, one of those stories that you read in the papers, which I'm not sure how much reality that or whether that those people are actually single and have any other.
They don't have kids, mate. Elsewhere. I reckon that's the thing. They don't have kids.
You say that. You're like, I feel like I've got so much time in my day. I'm scrolling on TikTok and I'm like, kids, you can't do this. So I'm like lapping it up. I'm on the couch. I'm like, I'm going to savor this moment. I'm taking photos with my eyes right now. You know, like I got to, I'm going to remember this day where it's like I had so much time, you know, and I feel like you get a little bit jealous now.
Oh, you mentioned before off air, you got three little ones under six. Would love to get into juggling dad and parent life and we're doing what you do.
Yeah. So the three under six is a big challenge. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I started this business in lockdown, this second one. Sold the last business. I think it was the day after my birthday it finalized. And then I had this next business registered like basically that next day. And yeah, I should have taken a break from it. And then we moved into that next phase. And I've already had, I'm pretty sure I had already had kids then. You know, I should remember that. And then we moved into, you know, had another kid and another kid. So, but I'll just touch back on what I was talking about, the stress stuff, like, you know, and I'll move back into this. But basically, I think the only thing that keeps me sane now and what keeps me on track is diet and exercise. And, you know, I'm not going to say I've been doing that forever because I've really only started doing that again the last 3 months. And that keeps me completely leveled. So, you know, it's just basically eat more protein, which then just gets me eating more salad and veggies, and just say to myself, get in the gym for 10 minutes, get on the bike, and then that always leads to a longer period instead of thinking you've got to go in there for an hour and kill myself. And, that's what keeps the stress levels low, keeps me, you know, out of the office or out in front of this computer because I've been sitting in, I think I've been working from home for 5 or 6 years. I've been locked down for that long. And then I had three kids working from home and started this new business working from home. As soon as that other business finalized, I started thinking about it prior to that, but then as soon as this one finalized, I went to the next one. And my wife said, you're not doing another one after this. You've got to stop. I was like, okay, let's agree that I will stop doing something, but it's difficult, yeah. So we'll see how long this goes for. But the kids, the best thing about having kids and working in this, in how I've come to where I am today is that, you know, I speak to other dads and they're like, I go to work, you know, work in Barangaroo in the city or something. I get up at 7 and I get home at 7. And so they really only see their children on the weekends, really realistically. So I'm able to get up, have breakfast with my kids. I make them food. You know, I make them dinner at night, you know, all of that. And, you know, I'm seeing them during the day, even though there's that stress of them there and there's always that, you know, I wouldn't say they're interruptive, but there's always that presence. And so whether or not that leads to a loss of productivity, I'm not sure. But I'm not sure whether or not traveling into the city and burning 2.5 hours backwards and forward and then, you know, standing around having lunch with people, going to coffees and, you know, having endless meetings in those environments is so productive either. But I do believe that having an office is productive in some respects. Like you do need to get together and see people, you know, grit and grin and, you know, press the flesh, I think is what brings really good teams together. But ultimately, we don't have that yet, so we've been working really well over Slack and video for quite some time, even though we catch up with that team time to time. But, yeah, the kids have – I think having kids around is I wouldn't want to change it only because I think having that close relationship with my kids is the most rewarding part of basically doing what I'm doing because you're all – everyone works to get freedom, right? I think at the end of the day, I mean, people think, you know, it's to have a lot of money, but I think really the end game is you want money so you can have freedom, and that freedom to get more time is really what drives, you know, just having more money, spending time with your kids so that you can, you know, enjoy what you've, the stresses that you've gone through, I suppose. But yeah, it hasn't been easy, that's for sure. I think anyone who smiles that's got three kids all the time is probably in a lot of pain.
he says as he smiles, he cackles, you know?
You say that though too, like business and life and stuff, like it's like, it's hard because sometimes I see the super strengths of, we can lock in for hours and do that thing, but it's like sometimes I feel like maybe that's a detriment as well, because I can maybe just slide back into reality a little bit, because like we can go for stints on like 8 hours.
You can do a bunch of work. And I feel like really echo what you're saying about, for us and my wife, like the fact that I'm home all the time, Matilda's nearly 2 years old now, and I feel like I haven't missed anything. You know, I've been there through different stuff. I might have been in the city one day if she's done something, but that's like an anomaly. It's like I'm not just seeing her on the weekends. I'm active. I'm a present dad. And like, it's like a family unit thing. And there definitely is the trade-offs when she's knocking on the door or we're trying to record audio like this, and I can fucking hear her screaming in the background. And I'm like,
presence.
I can feel the presence.
Feel the presence. Yeah.
But again,
this little shadow moving around.
It's also the real stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like me and Locke have done this pod and we'll try to really share who we are, what we do, and being open about that sort of stuff. And the fact that we do, like you said before, we run our stuff from home. Our office is his house and my house. And the fact that we're always doing stuff, that's good, bad, and ugly. And if you find people that don't like you because you got your kids that might come through and annoy you, it's like, well, that's my real life. You know what I mean? Like, that my life has impacted you. You know, I'm just trying to exist.
I'm just a man. Yes, hey, he's
I want to know about like your decision making process. I mean, breaking down when there's problems and stuff. Like, how do you go about making your decisions?
Are you referring to just the business decisions, or
business decisions? Like, hey, do we go with this or do we not? Like, what's the process if there's, you know, something coming up?
Well, decision making for us is, in terms of being a remote team, so we meet every day, as you'd imagine, on video, and then we have a priority meeting every 2 weeks, effectively. And from there, you know, there's some decisions which are made, which are business decisions, which just have to get done in terms of building product or, you know, marketing spend or whatever it might be. But then there's also, you know, you get a lot of noise from customers which are wanting, you know, different types of features, and so you prioritize those decisions based on customer feedback and surveys and everything. So we have automated surveys which go out for new customers at certain points of time and get feedback and question coming back in from them, which does shape a lot of those, I guess, that product roadmap and whether it changes. And so product roadmap for us is like, well, we think we want to do all these things and we think that's good for the customer. And we think what we've built is for a certain purpose, what we think the customer wants. But ultimately, what has started to happen, which is probably no surprise, is that customers start to use the product in different ways, which you didn't even think they would, which changes your roadmap again. So you're like, oh, I've actually built this product in a certain way so they can use this, you know, revenue-generating thing over here. But then they actually come in and start using it completely differently, and you're like, oh, what we built for them to get to B is actually the product they're using in A, and you're thinking, that's weird. So what's going on? So then you go out and you ask the customers, what are they really doing with the product, which then shapes more decisions for you to branch off in a different direction. So, you know, we started off as a product called Earned Wage Access almost 3 years ago. We built this product, put it out to market. It was a single product with a single type purpose, which was like, came about because when I was kicking off, when we built the Waddle product, which was automating accounting data in to make finance decisions and lines of credit, the cash flow, when I left that, I thought, well, there's this product which sort of feels the same. So I can tie into a payroll system. I can verify and determine how much, you know, you guys have made, and then I can give you access to that as a stream of money as you're earning it And we thought, that's such a cool concept. And everyone was, that is the best concept we ever heard of, streaming your income in real time. That sounds really cool. Like, I can do all these things. So we built that, did all of that. We built this automated money management system, which is, I still believe today, that it was so far ahead of its time that it just wasn't believable. So really what we did is we said, if you're a customer and you come in, you tie into your payroll system, we verify how much you earn, we calculate how much you earn per hour, then you tell us all the bills you've got and what dates they're due. And every hour we calculate and portion out that, say you earn a dollar an hour, right? We get each portion of that dollar and we put it aside to each bill that's coming out at the right frequency to hit the bill payment on the due date of that month. There's a lot of calculations going on. So effectively, once you get on the system and you're automating your bills, every hour you look at your phone, you get a real-time, what we call safe spend limit. And that's basically, as you're earning money, it's telling you how much you've got available based on all the frequency of bill payments that are coming up and then obligations you might have, like rent or home loans or investments. And you've got $100 an hour to spend this month, this hour, knowing that everything's going to be paid for. And so I'm like, cool, I can spend $100 knowing everything's done, my savings are done, my bills are paid, everything. And so what we found is that we couldn't educate people. They just like still can't understand, what do you mean it just automates everything for me? That can't be true. And so we went down that, we did build that whole system, right? It was like amazing. And when we got people onto it, they loved it. They couldn't get off it. They were like, this is so automated. It's like running this like dumb bank account, basically. Like, I just put money into it and it just does it for me. And it pays my bills, automates this, does everything. And we're like, this is the greatest concept. So we went around and we did all of that for a good year and a half, and we just couldn't get traction. And it didn't matter who we spoke to. They all said, beautiful concept, best thing I've ever heard. In practice, we just couldn't get customers. So what we basically figured out was that selling people that idea up front was too abstract. It's like, that is, you got to lead them on a journey and you got to build a product-led strategy, which in hindsight, I already knew that, but like, well, we got wrapped up in building this cool tech, which was really cool tech, which we will bring back, but then we flipped that to taking a product-led approach, which is basically, can people sign up to an app super quick? Yes. Can they trust that you transact and their money's safe? Yes. Can they pay bills with it? Yes. Can they send money to their mates? Yes. Can they click a few buttons and things just happen and it's always reliable and it never goes down and they can live their life on it? Yes. Is this a replacement from a bank? No, but it's something cool you can use to manage your money quicker, smarter, and easier, and it takes you a few seconds to sign up to, and you can start doing some cool stuff like, you know, investing into, you know, shares and stocks and ETFs, and, you know, maybe get a high yield savings account. And but I'm cool, I've still got my CDA account, but I want to use this because it's got some really easy features and stuff, which, you know, helps me automate some money that my bank doesn't take care of, because banks are really good for the masses, but they're not good for segments of people. Like, you know, there's like 7 million Gen Zers that are coming out into the workforce. They've never heard about money. Well, they've not that they've heard about money, but they've never managed their money. No one's taught them how to manage their money. They get them ready for the workforce, but they won't get them ready for, you know, if you just put some money aside today, by the time you're 30, you're going to have $1 million. They're like, yeah, no way that's going to happen. Yeah, if you do it like this, you will have $1 million and you won't be suffering when you're 30, when you say, holy crap, maybe I should have started investing. And that all comes from me, because when I started doing websites back when I was young, that was during the dot-com boom. And I always think that there's a few little things I missed out on. Like, I still today remember thinking about Amazon stock when I was really young. And that's a major one that people talk about. But I really did, honestly, hand on heart, look at Amazon stock when I was like 16 or 17 years old. I was like, I should put some money into it. And I literally just didn't, because I thought, who's gonna order parcels online? That's nuts. And so you're like, if I just threw a little bit into and had some education around how cycles and how compounding and cycling, you know, long-term investing works, that my life would be so different at 30. But still, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today, but notwithstanding the general, you know, the masses of people aren't starting businesses every day and taking risks. They just want to be set up and have independence and at some point get off the 30-year mortgage, which is probably now, I think they've extended to 35, so we can all borrow some more money, is that what the banks are doing? So there's that. That's where that sort of all stems from. So today, that's what we're focusing on, is like, well, let's not try and convince you that we can automate your life. Let's try and convince you that we're safe, we're easy, we're quick, we're fast, and we're really cool, and that we can get you on a path to saving and path to investing and portion your money from your bank account and do the things which your current bank aren't or haven't got the ability to look at right now. And that's people from 16 years old, roughly, up until 22, 23. And then once they start getting on that path, they've already, you know, had a lot of education around what investing looks like, instead of just, you know, quick, fast purchases and blow all your cash and get hammered, which is the world we live in, I guess.
We still have friends who I reckon are on the parents are still paying the phone bill, eh?
In their 30s, I reckon, aren't they? We've got a few friends.
Yeah. I haven't got
no, I'm thinking about it.
Get off.
Is that team. We've got some friends or that's us?
Oh, that's funny. What about like some of the trends you're seeing from next generation people coming through? What are some of the obvious stuff, how they think differently about this space?
I think the trend is definitely moving a little bit more towards awareness around investments, and that's probably primarily because, and I might get shot for saying this, but cryptocurrency has brought an awareness around putting money into something and it moving up or down, which leads to people thinking about what are more stable-looking things, you know, traditional investments. So maybe that's helped bring an awareness around that, you know. And I think, you know, you can go straight to the obvious, you know, markers of inflation and people not having enough money to eat and all this sort of stuff. But I think that's always been the case. I think that there's always going to be people that suffer and people that can't afford things or live beyond their means. And I'm not sure whether or not that's driving the way young people think. I think young people are thinking about, you know, long-term, what happens now when I turn 30? And because of there's a lot more focus on investment products, it's just becoming, there's a lot of noise around investment products and there's a lot of choice, which then also leads to, I guess, an opportunity to be taken for a ride or invest in the wrong things, and that can be damaging. So I think the space has definitely moved to the younger generation thinking about longevity and long-term wealth, and it's moved very far from I'm going to go work for a company, and this is obvious, but I'm going to go work for a company and work for it for 15 years and they're going to give me a payout, you know, and that's going to set me up and I'm going to sit there and pay off my mortgage, and when I turn 60, I'm going to enjoy my retirement. Yeah, they're moving. There's moved that movement towards, well, why do I have to wait till 60 to enjoy myself? I need to enjoy the process, not kill myself till I'm 60 and then enjoy myself, because then I'm old and great. The bank's benefited from me, and that's basically it. So we've moved from this mortgages or, you know, your lockdown of forced savings, which then you can then finally enjoy, to how do I figure out how to have fun along the way? And I think that's probably a little bit part of it. I'm probably simplifying a lot of that, but I don't think there's one thing you can pinpoint as to say, this is why young people are interested in becoming wealthy. It's a whole, you know, myriad of the landscape today. It's social media, it's, you know, awareness, investment products, is, you know, this social scams, as you know, YouTubers and the Instagram accounts with the Ferraris and Lambos. There's all of that sort of stuff which brings awareness around, you know, wealth creation, I suppose. But yeah, I think the noise is a lot of noise, and they're looking for safety, and safety is, you know, understanding that long-term wealth is not a moonshot. It's something you need to start doing in process in a process driven way, like dollar cost averaging or just continually putting in and watching cycles of movement. And I understand it's a long process to do that, but using your job as a pathway and using that income to get better at whatever you're doing and investing early is the key, I think. But yeah, that's a hard, very difficult question to answer. I think very difficult question to answer.
I feel like the days are gone now, especially with the how accessible information is about how people's life happens or what the, however they've made stuff happen. Like what you mentioned before, like next gen, like crypto or whatever it might be that can see stuff. It's like, we definitely feel like that. I don't want to go work somewhere for 20 years and just to be what made redundant and then no thank you or whatever. It's like, what, you know, like there's so many variables out there. I think you can especially see now, especially over the last like 18 months with changes and stuff going on, that people maybe who have taken an old school approach of just going and grinding at working one place have just shown how harsh business really is. And it's not really, it's not whether or not you've done a good job or a bad job. Sometimes it's just, that's just the nature of what it is. And it means that you could be out the door anyway. So it feels like there's risk everywhere. And it's hard not to want to tackle your own pathway to build whatever it is that you want in your life.
Yeah, I used to, funny you say that, because I've interviewed engineers for our startup, and they've said, you know, they've got to the end and like, oh, look, I'm a bit worried because it's a bit risky joining a startup because you guys might run out of money at some point. And I said, oh, well, I guess it's risky working for large corporates. You know, A, you've got, you know, layoff risk, and you've got, you know, can you, the risk is you don't do your job and you're not useful to the company. So that's your biggest risk. And, you know, I think today, I guess this cycle that's happening right now, it's like whether I work for a startup or a large corporate, like they're laying off hundreds of people at a time and you're just you're just on the chopping block. They don't come around and go, was he a good bloke that did a good job? Who should I fire or not? They just go, that whole department, you're gone. So that's where it sort of sits. So when you're talking about, am I going to be like, get a gold pen at the end of the day, like the old days or a, you know, whatever it might be, that's kind of not very obvious that that's not. And people are really aware of that now. So it's like, it's about doing the best you can in that job to maybe, and my brother's a really good example, is he's very good at navigating, you know, doing a really good job where he is and then navigating the best income at the next place he goes to, because he's either out, you know, his usefulness at that place or whatever he came to do was not there anymore. And it's about understanding that. Whereas you can get into a job and become quite relaxed and lazy, not lazy, but you kind of just plateau and you just sit there and do the job that you're asked to do and whatever else. And if that's what you want to do and you're very good at maybe just taking that income and investing it over here and bettering, you know, that's what you're using that job to do, which is moving the income from the employer's pocket to your investment account or whatever it might be, then that's good too. But if you're interested in getting a higher income and moving around, you've got a stepstone and move around the industry, network, and, you know, obviously involve yourself in all of that. I've got a guy up the road who's a Qantas pilot, and he said the best thing he does is play golf. And he plays golf because of the networking. He said the deals are done in the clubhouse at the end of the day, you know, networking with everyone after the golf day. He said that's where I find either new work or, you know, get a better paycheck effectively. So these guys are always thinking about how to get a better paycheck effectively, and then so he can renovate his house to increase his value. But yeah, it's such a, like you were saying, it's so different today. And I always do actually think about how different is this information culture, where we just understanding everything everyone's doing, like everything's laid out. Like before, I mean, I was only talking the other day with my parents saying, remember when we just had a phone book at home, like an actual black book with everyone's names in it written down, and you had to dial a number. And now it's, you know, those sort of things are completely gone now. I don't have to call you. I just have to check your Facebook and know what you're up to. Oh, he's good. Oh, he's up at Hamo this week. Or he's gone up to the shops. He's checked in at the footy. Don't have to ring you anymore to know where you are. So, or that person, like you're saying, is I follow this person. They've got an investment strategy. They're driving Lambos. They're buying big houses or something. And, you know, that's sort of is all around us at the moment. I think be tough if you're young at the moment, I swear. Like, it'd be really difficult to really understand. Like, if you're a young bloke, you're 17, just started working, get your paycheck coming in, you're thinking, oh, you know, just saw this like great article on the stock alert, you know, podcast or something, and they've told me to buy this stock or invest into this property scheme or something. Like, the noise is intense. And so finding those trustworthy sort of pockets, or even how, where to start off, you know, or going, when I was younger, it used to be, come to a property conference, you know, there's a property development, you can buy options to buy land and then sell those options if the developer comes along, and, you know, all those things used to happen. So it's, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow that you're not going to get rich overnight and that you got to start early as you possibly can. I always say this, I've never met anyone that hasn't said that they wish they didn't start early, investing earlier. So the quicker you can put a dollar into an account and watch it grow and try not to, to touch it, which is the hardest part, right, is that, you know, it's hard. It's just really difficult when you're 20 years old thinking, when I'm 40, you know, what's it going to look like, you know.
Hey, weirdly enough, we're getting to the end of 2023. What are you excited about for the rest of the year?
My brain just went straight to putting up Christmas decorations, but I think, yeah, it's probably actually spending the most time with my kids, to be honest. I never used to be a Christmas 1st of December person, but since I've had kids, it's all about, you know, December 1, put up the decorations. And last year we were away in Bali for 6 weeks over Christmas, and we said, oh, there's no way we're going away at Christmas again with the kids, because, like, the, yeah, all of the festivities that happen around Christmas here are just, you know, it's such a good time of the year, isn't it? Like, you're, like, far out, can't wait for it. It's just different. There's a different vibe. There's a different feel in the air, and everyone's kind of happy, and they're sort of forgetting about, you know, reading the headlines in the paper so much anymore. But that's probably the biggest thing. With the business, I think it's mostly just, you know, pushing out a couple of these larger products we've got. We've got this investment product coming out in about a month's time, which is the thematic portfolio investing stuff, which is a lot of what I was sort of hitting on there with, you know, how do younger Australians figure out, you know, there's all these investment options that are out there. Do you want to invest in high risk or low risk or medium risk? And they're like, I seem to think so. I want to do low risk, maybe medium, but the rates look like I'm going to get a good return on high risk. That looks fine, but not really understanding that. So we've done it all based on thematic stable returns, like still good returns, but more about the industry or the belief, you know, AI, robotics, you know, that sort of themes around what people are interested in. I'm as a young person, do I want to get involved in the healthcare sector? Do I want to get invested in, you know, Elon Musk's drive and the EV, you know, that whole sector that's emerging quite tight fast. So there's that component coming out. We've got a capital raise that's currently in play at the moment, raising $2 million. So we're educating the market right now about, you know, we've had, you know, more than 15,000 people come through in the last couple of months into our app. We've got, you know, all these things happening. The business is poised for really, I guess, big scale up and bringing in a new, you know, I guess a new set of or fresh investors into the platform, which are going to help us grow and meet the targets of these next, you know, revenue generating things that we're going to put in front of customers, and savings and high yields accounts, and really, really try and target that sector and make a big push into that younger demographic, which is pretty underserved at the moment. There is definitely apps out there which are singularly looking for, you know, offering things to people, but there's not really a single point app which outside of your bank, which can kind of be a complement to your bank account, which can help you portion your money out, you know, get access to portfolios and a high yield savings account, you know, and some share trading and ETFs and gold and silver and things like that, while also being able to send some money to your mates for, you know, paying back for drinks for the night sort of thing. So that's what we're really focused on now. That's what we're really trying to drive at the moment, is this capital raise, close that round, release the investment product, move into some other things, and then head into Christmas and put the decorations up is what I'm probably most focused on. Oh, and trying to extend my 10-minute workouts.
Do you dress up as Santa from December 1? You've put the kit on?
I don't. I don't, but my neighbor convinced the wife's dad, and he went out and ordered a literally like a $400, like I don't know what he was thinking, but I think he was so excited. He went and spent $400 on this Nordic, come from Norway or somewhere. This, it's like an epic costume, like what you imagine you see in one of those old picture books of the big coat on and everything. And he gets on the back of a tipper and comes down the street. Ho, 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 you know. Why does Santa's breath smell like beer? So he loves it. So all the kids come out and meet the Santa truck as he goes around. And before that, we've got Halloween coming up as well. So that's always an exciting thing. But, yeah, before kids, none of that was a thing. Halloween wasn't even a thing until I had kids, and now it's a huge thing. So
is it Bad Santa with Billy Bob Thornton?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
Well, mate, thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with us today. It's been unreal to pick your brain, and so nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too, fellas. Thank you very much for happening and having me. And thanks for hearing the story and how we got me. Appreciate it.
Love it, brother.
Hey, funny business listeners, Caleb from SquareX here. I just wanted to jump on and let you guys know at the end of this ep, SquareX is currently open for investment. So if you're interested in learning more about what we do at SquareX and want to get involved in the digital future of the agricultural supply chains, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or to the Dream Big Social Club team to learn more.